So knowing that there are so many things that we have to learn in clinical trials, but again, that we have to make decisions today, can you talk a little bit about your algorithm for approaching first and second line therapy in metastatic disease? And let's just focus on the clinical science and risk benefit and sort of put cost and reimbursement aside and the FDA aside and just really look at what we know about the risks and benefits of different options right now. How would you put it together?
Sure. And, you know, I think this is where I'll give you an answer today as of January 2008. But I'll tell you, my answers today are different than they were even 1 year ago, and I think are likely to be different a year from now. But at least with the information we have today, the availability that we have today, thinking about risk stratification, I look at my patients when I first see them and I sort of size them up as, are they good, intermediate, or poor risk? And I won't necessarily strictly go by those criteria, but there are more guidelines. But if I've got a patient that's very asymptomatic, low volume disease, maybe a delay from their original diagnosis to their time of metastasis, really a good risk population patient. If they're young and healthy, that's a patient that I may talk still about high-dose IL-2. Although we don't have a high durable long-term disease-free control or cure rate in there, there is a subset of patients that will still respond with a complete response. And so I think it's fair for patients to at least hear that. I don't push anybody towards that. That's an extremely toxic approach, and I think it's something that you need a motivated patient in order to get them through that. So I let patients know about it. If it's something they push back and really want to do, then we may pursue that. Most of the time, in the context of other therapies, it's something our patients have steered away from. And then we'll talk about some of our other agents. Probably the agent that we have the best data with in this first-line setting is sunitinib, in its phase 3 study. The good risk subpopulation showed a dramatic difference compared to interferon in a hazard ratio of 0.3 in terms of progression-free survival benefit. So that's a population that I'll either consider watchful waiting or starting sunitinib. Now, bevacizumab would be an alternative as well. Every other week dosing in a patient population that may have time on drug for a year or more may not be attractive, but we'll talk about that as well. And so that's a population we'll start with those two, sorafenib and temsirolimus agents I'd probably consider in the second or third line setting there. In the intermediate or poor risk patient population, I also think about sunitinib, but then I'll also begin to think about temsirolimus, particularly if they have a poor performance status and worried about their ability to tolerate that drug. In the second line setting, in patients that have failed agents like sunitinib, I'll start thinking about either switching to sorafenib or temsirolimus. And here too, I think Avastin may get into this field more. In this setting, if they failed sunitinib early, they've had either no response to it or limited response to it, I'll move towards temsirolimus. But if they've been on sunitinib for a year or more and tolerated it pretty well but then maybe had dose reductions, that's a patient I may consider trying sorafenib in next rather than switching right over to temsirolimus. And then finally, Avastin. I think, you know, some of the things to look for in the next year are some of these phase 1 studies that were initially reported combining Avastin and mTOR inhibitors like temsirolimus or RAD001. I think you're going to see some more data with good tolerance with those two agents in particular. I think that's where Avastin may actually have its probably biggest impact, is being able to combine with other approaches. I do like it as a single agent in my patients that I'm worried about. Maybe they have a good risk feature, but they're poor performance status from other health concerns, heart failure and things like that. That's a patient population I might consider Avastin in. So it's a complicated answer. I can't give you a clear algorithm, but I think that there's roles for many of these agents in the frontline setting. Probably 80% of my patients start out on sunitinib, and then we'll move to some of these other agents, sorafenib or temsirolimus, second and third line.